Fads come and go, and nowhere more than in the world of weight loss. That's why Noom's weight management programs are made to last. Noom uses science and personalization to help you manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
And welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Benched with Bubba, episode 598. Going to recap the week 16 fab and then go over a slew of injured players that may be coming back soon, maybe not. We don't even know. It's a wild card in this whole scenario, but there's a little over 2 months of the season left. It's kind of like you need to add or you need to drop these guys, or what are we doing? Like, it's serious decisions need to be made on some of these players coming up here. Obviously, we have ILs. We'll bring that into play as well, but for the most part, you get the drift of the show. You can find me on Twitter at BDentric, and my guest again, which I love having on the show, you can find him on Twitter at BreakingBen_T. Ben Ted, how we doing, my friend?
Hey, Bob, I'm doing great. Glad to be on again. Thanks for having me. It's always a pleasure. And, you know, it's not going to be the most optimistic episode today, but we got to deal with it.
Yeah, it's not going to be, but it's one of those, like, you know, I had Curlin yesterday, last week, rooting for injuries. So we're going to take the other approach here. And for us that have to battle said injuries, how do we approach the situation? And we'll go from there. So, yeah, it's going to be fun. We're out of the All-Star break in our first full week of the season. We're getting some guys back, some guys not so much. Good news, like literally right before the show, I saw Brandon Woodruff is set to make his first rehab assignment start in single A. I believe this weekend. So that's at least some positive, because we're going to have a lot of negative, like you said. So we got a little bit of positive coming our way for those that kept Brandon Woodruff. I almost put him on the outline, but I'm like, no, if you kept him this long, you're not dropping him now. Just so people know, I basically went down NFBC and looked at all the IL guys. If they were heavily, heavily rostered, like 100%, I didn't even put them on the list. Some of them I did, because some of them are longer injuries. And we'll start with one, Shane Bieber. It was kind of a developing injury, because it was like, oh, he's kind of got this like arm issue, but it's not too crazy. Now he's going on the IL, but good news, he's going to avoid surgery, which the fact that his right elbow inflammation needed a potential surgery is not the most ideal thing. He's not striking guys out this year, which is always a thing, but he was starting to a little bit towards like before he got hurt. So I wonder if there's something correlating with that. I don't know. But let's just speak out loud here, because this is what we're going to do today, Ben. When we talk about Shane Bieber, and as usual, I use NFBC OC because they're 12 teams. Rates will vary. Bieber is still rostered at 94% of OCs. And thank you to the 21% that started him this week. I appreciate you. But the 94% that have him rostered, okay, that's a fair conversation. And that's what we're going to have here. If you are a Shane Bieber manager, Ben, how are you approaching him?
I think it comes down to how many injured guys I already have. If he's my only one, which I feel like is highly unlikely at this point of the season, then I'd hold on to him definitely. But if he's like your third or fourth, it really comes down to who else you have. But yeah, to your point, the strikeouts, yeah, they're picking up at the end and before this injury. And yeah, like he's just not pitching like Shane Bieber this year. It's a tough one. The shutdown for 2 weeks does not sound very good. So I would lean towards dropping him, I think. I only have him on a draft and hold, so I don't have to make that decision, luckily. But yeah, that shutdown doesn't sound too good, and I wouldn't be too optimistic about a quick turnaround.
Yeah, and that's one of the key words that you mentioned there, and obviously neither of us are doctors. We are just literally playing the fantasy guessing game like the best of us do. When it comes down to when you hear the words shut down, that essentially means he's not throwing for 2 weeks. So then you know, if it's a short shutdown, then the ramp up obviously isn't as long, but he still has to ramp back up, get into pitching form. What are we thinking? Maybe a month at best is what we're thinking here. So now we're almost into the end of August, early September, and you got to kind of see if the Guardians are out of it. Do they really push this envelope, so on and so forth? So I'm kind of leaning with you on this one. And I know people probably want straighter answers in this scenario, but it's everything that we do today is team dependent. If you have IL spots, you IL guys, very simple stuff. Like Ben plays a lot of Yahoo also, so he can give his insights there in scenarios that they see there. But I'm with Ben. In 12s, I think he's an easier drop for me. It's just one of those. At this point, if somehow he comes back out of miraculously in 3 weeks, well, you either get him back or you don't. Tough bananas. In 15s, it's a tougher question, but you play mainly 15, so you're willing to drop him there. So I'm with you. I think Biebs gets the drop. We'll see how Logan Allen, he comes back on Tuesday, as we record on Tuesday, to make his return, and his minor league stint was not great either. So we'll see how that pans out. But I'm with you on Bieber for now. I think if he comes back, it's a tough win. He comes back and how effective he'll be. Liam Hendricks. This is another one that is kind of tough because he came. Well, A, if you saw his speech at the ESPYs, that was absolutely an amazing thing that he did there. But the fact he pitched all of last season with his cancer, that was nuts to be that good. He was cleared and began throwing on June 27th. So that was a ways away. He's throwing in a simulated game tomorrow on Wednesday the 19th, a simulated game. So it's like one of those, if all goes well, maybe rehab assignments start next week. You get him back in, say, 10 to 14 days, give or take. So with Liam Hendricks, are you – I don't think you're dropping him now, but how aggressive are you to stash him? That's kind of the point of this. Are we dropping, stashing? What are we doing? What are your thoughts on Liam Hendricks?
Yeah, I've heard people debate on other podcasts about whether they would trade him, but I think considering – the injury, and then also I think someone may have mentioned, like, is it like the familiarity with his doctors for his treatment, probably in Chicago, that it would make sense not to trade him. So I think he'll probably stick with the White Sox for the rest of the year. And if he's already on his rehab assignment, he should be back relatively soon, unless he has a setback. So, like, I just lost Hunter Harvey, or if you're a Will Smith manager or something like that, where you've lost your RP2. I think stashing him makes sense if he's available. I am looking at the NF or the main event and on the NFBC rostership percentage, and he's 98%. So he's pretty much taken there. But like in a, like you mentioned, Yahoo, if he's on the waiver wire, I would definitely consider adding him if you need saves. Hopefully, yeah. Like, well, I think he had an elbow issue, which is never good either. But yeah. I mean, Graveman has been struggling lately, and I know Santos is a big fab darling right now, at least in deeper leagues. And Middleton kind of fizzled out too, but I mean, there's definitely options that they're going to sell pieces away. So I'm sure Graveman will be gone. So I don't see why Hendricks couldn't be the closer when he comes back again.
Yeah, I'm with you. Opposite of Bieber, Hendricks is close. We saw signs of good. Some of the bad, I kind of just notch it to fatigue and not being fully back in game mode yet. And that might be the same problem we deal with when he returns. But the other part you mentioned, the White Sox haven't really impressed anybody with the other options that have been back there. Plus, they might trade quite a few of these options coming up here. So I'm with you on the Liam Hendricks thing for many reasons. Like you said, his doctor's there, so they're probably not going to trade him. It would be like team suicide to trade the story just in general of Liam Hendricks. Like when your team's not winning games, you need stuff like Liam Hendricks around, as bad as that may sound if you took it the wrong way. But like, he is good for the team to be there for many reasons. So I'm with you. I'd like to pick him up if you need saves. It's a season where saves haven't been as prevalent on the waiver wire. So this could be a guy to start stashing here, as he might be back here sooner than later. O'Neal Cruz, popular name on many shows. Like, I know I started stashing him a couple of weeks ago. Like, we even talked about him a couple of weeks ago. Other shows have been starting to talk about stashing him. If you follow many of the different great, like Zach Waxman and McCabe reports, that O'Neal Cruz has been getting stashed. The latest report, though, I have it from like June 30th that he started playing catch. They're still expecting him back sometime in August, they're saying, hopefully earlier than later. What are your thoughts on O'Neal Cruz? Because I already basically showed my hand. I'm stashing wherever I can.
I agree with that. As long as you're able to. Like, if you just had – if you have Shane Bieber, and now you have to make a decision probably. I think – did you mention that his estimated return date was like August 10th, I think? So that's – it's a little less than a month out, but I mean, that's – best case scenario probably. So I mean, there's also a chance that it could get pushed back a week or something. So if if you're short of middle infield right now, I think he's worth stashing. But I mean, the Pirates aren't going anywhere either. So if he has a setback, they could probably just shut him down also if it's going to be that late in the season. But I mean, he is the most upside probably of anyone available in free agency right now. So I could see why you'd want to stash him. I don't have him anywhere. I could have added him a couple weeks ago, but I had other stashes at the time. So yeah.
I don't blame you at all. Like, and it's one of those that really, I was really pumped with my stash. Obviously you want to be excited about your stashes. And then I'm sitting there going, the Pirates are actually calling up a bunch of young players. Like, they called up a shortstop recently in Peguero. Like, they're calling up players to see what they have. I know if O'Neill Cruz is back healthy, he's playing shortstop. I'm not oblivious to that. Maybe he goes to DH for a bit. Who knows? But like you said, the Pirates have nothing to really play for except see what their young players have. They know what they have in O'Neill Cruz, so they don't have to rush this thing. I would still grab him if you can and see where it goes. But that window's closing quickly as people are on to that one. Nestor Cortez. This is a fun one. Pitched to more live hitters on Monday. Supposed to start a rehab assignment later this week or this weekend, potentially. You would know as the Yankees guy over there. But Nasty Nestor, we know how he got the nickname for a reason. Like, the dude is really good. Still, these like shoulder type injuries are never, you know, make you feel warm and fuzzy. But we saw Rodon come back. Nestor's supposedly rehabbing very strongly, and they're expecting him back early August if all continues to go right. So what are you doing with Nestor Cortez? Because the other reason I want to bring up a lot of these starting pitchers here is everybody loved the prospects in Fab. We're starting to get to the world where shutdowns and limited innings are starting to happen. So you might need new starting pitchers here and there where these stashes might come in handy. So Nestor Cortez, what's your thoughts on him?
I have been stashing him all year in one of my main events, which I probably shouldn't have considering how pitching is going for that team. So one thing I'll mention when we're done with this, it's a greater theme, but just like the optimism of coming back on time. I feel like he's someone who's had his date pushed back multiple times, or like there's talk of him getting ready to come back and then he just doesn't go on that rehab assignment yet. So he's been a disappointment when he has been playing this year, because I think he was going around pick 100 in drafts. And I wonder how much of that poor performance was the shoulder already, like if he was already hurt. It's hard to say for sure, but with him getting close and the way pitching is, when you compare it to Bieber, he's on the way up as opposed to Bieber's just like done. So I could see why Nestor's more appealing. So I'm going to hold on to him personally still, but that's about 2 weeks away optimistically. So if you can't afford to keep him any longer, that I could see cutting him because he wasn't that good to begin with, but I'm going to hold on to him until he comes back, unless it gets pushed out again. I'll just cut him. But
and that's a great point, is you need to know, like, okay, we were excited about it. Look, I'll use my Trevor Rogers example. They made it easy just because the injury was so crazy, but it seemed so good, and all of a sudden pushback. It was an easy drop. Nestor's better than Trevor Rogers in my mind. I'm not going to deny that, but it's a great point, because we are getting to the point of the year now of a 2 week setback. Now you're pretty much going to be donezo when it's all said and done. I grabbed Nestor Cortez, I think, in 1OC during the All-Star break, just started stashing him there, stuff like that. But he's on my radar for sure. I think he's worth giving a look. Ryan Helsley, it was getting weird there for a while anyways. He was splitting closing roles towards the end before he got hurt with the forearm strain. He started throwing on flat ground last week, give or take. Still has a long ways to go, it sounds like. I haven't seen a definite time. Maybe you've seen one. But with Jordan Hicks playing so well, given he might get traded, the Cardinals are on a big flash sale, so it's going to come down here pretty soon. So what's your thoughts on Ryan Helsley, who I still don't know when he's coming back is my problem.
His NFBC page has it for this Friday, actually, the 21st.
Wow.
That's good. But his last update was also in June, so who knows how accurate that is still. I think Hicks could get traded. I mean, if I'm another team, though, I wouldn't trust his walk rate. But as a reliever, like we see Chapman overcome the walk issues. I think Hicks probably has a higher rate though than Chapman. So it's hard to stay out of trouble when you're walking so many guys. If they stay at the bottom though, I could see them holding on to him. I mean, he's not that young. So, I mean, they don't want to rush him back and have him get hurt either way. But I don't know. He's one where I saw him dropped in one of my main events. I may have brought it up on your show last time I was on, but yeah, so someone cut him before, like right when he got hurt. So, and that's a deep league too. So unless we get more news soon, I wouldn't hold on to him if I needed to make a cut.
Yeah, he threw off the mound a few days ago. But yeah, they're hoping for this weekend, if not middle of next week, it looks like, from what I just read. So
to return, he could be back fully. Soon.
Yeah, that's what they're saying, if there's no more setbacks. So we'll have to wait and see how that goes. But there's another potential closer, because all the reports say he's going to step back in a closer's role. I'll believe that when I see it, because he really wasn't full into the closer's role when he had it. I think it's more Hicks gets traded, like we talked about, is the big scenario there. Another popular starting pitcher that has been talked about as a stash option is Chris Sale. Sale threw his first bullpen session this past Tuesday. So that is Tuesday. His first time off the mound since his injury on June 1st. They're hopeful he's back in early August is the expectation with Sale. And he was throwing very well before he got hurt. So is Chris Sale a potential stash for you?
Yeah, I would say he is, just based on his upside. He's one of the guys I identified as one of those injury optimism guys that haven't really panned out. And I haven't been a fan of his because of how he's been injured so much the last few years. And I know like his underlying metrics have suggested he should be better than he has been. I think he's been about at least a 4 ERA the last few years. But it's like how it goes with all these guys. If you can afford to stash him, then definitely. I know he was pretty popular a couple weeks ago. I saw him on Twitter, his name going around as one of those stashes, like with Kyle Wright. But they definitely need him. The Red Sox do, their rotation's a mess. So he probably has one of the higher upsides on this list, I would say. So I could see why you'd want to stash him.
100%. Now the fun part is where we start doing these. Would you rather stash Nestor Cortez or Chris Sale?
Chris Sale.
Okay.
Though I'm stashing Nestor, but
yeah. Well, Sale might not have been available for you. You never know.
Right, yeah.
Jorge Polanco began his rehab assignment this past weekend. This last hamstring injury kept him out about a month. He's been dealing with these soft tissue injuries a lot this season, so it's been very, very frustrating with Jorge Polanco. We know when he's out there, he's pretty productive, but he has not been able to stay healthy this year. And on the flip side, Edward Julian's actually playing very, very well all of a sudden, which doesn't really force the hand. Polanco will start more often than not, of course, but it gives the Twins more options than they had beforehand. So if you're looking at Jorge Polanco, because I remember after his first injury a while back, I was stashing him, enjoyed him for a couple of weeks. Then he had this latest injury. I dropped him right away. I have not went back and added him yet. If Jorge Polanco was available for you, would you be stashing Jorge Polanco?
I would. He's like a top 200 player going into the season before he got hurt. And I think his NFBC page has him at this Friday for his estimated return date. Yep. So he's about to come back. So if you're in a daily transaction league where you don't have to wait till next Sunday to make a move, I would definitely try to add him back if he's available. And when he did come back that first time, like you mentioned, he started right away. He's one of the guys who they haven't really been messing with his playing time. It's just that he's been hurt so much. That's why he's barely played. But I think this time they definitely made sure his hamstring healed, because I believe it was the same one that he injured the first time, which isn't good. As a Yankee fan, Donaldson has hurt his calf again, and that's, it's all connected, so I could easily see Polanco hurting his hamstring again. But yeah, he'd be higher up in the list, I would say, for people I'd want to stash from our list.
Yeah, the Polanco thing just reminded me of like Jonathan India last year, where they brought India back early, then he re-aggravated and he was out for a while. I think that's why I dropped him right away, because India was out for a long time, where Polanco a month wasn't as bad as I expected, I guess. I'm curious to see how his running is with this, or if they baby him back in that scenario. But it will be interesting to see. If you're in a league where Polanco's available, Edward Julian is still available in some formats, don't get me wrong. Zach Geloff was a popular ad this past week. We'll talk about him as well. Let's just say those three second basemen right there. How would you rank those three second basemen?
Probably Polanco, definitely, if I need power more than speed, then Geloff, and then Julian. Because I think Julian will get hurt by Polanco coming back.
Yeah, that's a good call. Good call indeed. Hunter Harvey, this is a pretty easy one for me. I'm curious to see what you have to say, but everything I've read since the injury happened, like doing the first pitch podcast and everything, it's not very optimistic on like a quick return for Hunter Harvey. They're still doing tests and maybe things change, you know, modern medicine and whatnot, but he has like a forearm strain and elbow issue. Combination is just nasty. He's pitching very well as the closer for the Washington Nationals, but he's on the 15-day IL. No timetable to return as of yesterday when I looked. That could have changed. Like I said, they've been doing a ton of tests on Hunter Harvey. Finnegan picked up the save on Monday night, but he might get dealt. So Hunter Harvey, stash or just let go?
As I mentioned to you before we started recording, I do have Hunter Harvey in a main event. I also had him on my two Yahoo teams. On the one I cut and the other one, because I already had a full IL, and the other one I am stashing for now. Depending on the news we get this week, I'll make the decision on the main event going into this weekend. And we'll cover how I replaced him. We'll try to at least at the end. But so it says he has a strain, but so far on his note, it says that he only felt the discomfort there, and they're awaiting the MRI results, unless they already came back and they just haven't updated the note.
As of last night when I recorded that show, they're still waiting for information. Yeah. So
not yet. So, I mean, it could just be like inflammation or something, but if it is a strain, then he's probably a drop.
Yeah. He's going to be an interesting one because he's pitching very good. And this is a guy that, like, I have a ton of DCs and stuff because I love the talent as a late round, like potential saves guy, all these things, probably why you have him in mains and whatnot. Same idea. And he was finally coming to fruition. It was looking beautiful. And then all good things seem to come to an end, unfortunately. So, I root for the guy because he's battled injuries his whole career. He used to be like a stud starting pitching prospect for the Orioles. And it's just, he's just been bouncing everywhere. Finally got a little run here and it came to an end. Brian Hayes continues to battle back injuries when back on the IL on July 7th after coming off for like a couple days. They're hoping that it's only like a 2-week absence, so he could be back here sometime next week. Back injuries are nasty. What are you doing with Brian Hayes?
He's also another player that has a projected return date of today, according to NFBC. So I'll have to check
lineups. While you're doing that, I'll check lineups.
Yeah. He's someone that's always been a disappointment, except for 2020. And he's young enough where they would want him to get some more playing time, see what they have with him, them being the Pirates. And, I mean, I actually added his replacement in Fab this past weekend. And he, if he's back right now, then sure, run him out there because I think they'll play him. They want to see what they have with him, especially if you need stolen bases. Those steals at third is nice, especially if you're lacking, which – if you're lacking this year, you're probably in trouble at this point. But don't expect any power with that back injury for sure. And I could easily see him re-aggravating it again. But if he's coming back today or this week, then.
Yeah, he's not back in today's on Tuesday's lineup. Not back yet. Right, but maybe sometime this week. We'll see. He's just been
he's a drop player. Otherwise, probably. I don't know. He's not very good.
That's kind of why I wanted to bring it up because people are like, oh, he's one of the top third base targets. And that's like, yeah, this is where the biasy conversation comes back into play. He is, but he's been so underwhelming this year. Like, okay, here's a fun one, not even really that we know of injury related. What are you doing with a guy like Anthony Rizzo, who is no power, not hitting for average? Like, his month of June was horrific. I wrote about him on a Fantasy Pros piece. It's been brutal for Rizzo. You obviously watch it probably every day. He's not really helping a fantasy team anywhere. So say you got a guy like Anthony Rizzo, that's where similar to the Brian Hayes conversation. He used to be just kind of lock and load, don't think about it. But Rizzo's not helping, he's hurting you. So how you doing that?
I feel like his neck has to be hurt because everyone keeps bringing up the collision with Tatis back in May, I think it was, or something. And he hasn't hit a homer since week 8. So that's probably like May, honestly. Yeah. Well, I would prefer Rizzo over Hayes just because of the type of player that Rizzo has shown he is. That's assuming he's actually healthy. I mean, I don't see the Yankees giving up and shutting him down or anything like that, but I feel like Rizzo's in the rowdy boat where it was getting really bad and you didn't want to cut him, but it probably made sense to. In a 15, I would definitely hold on to Rizzo, but if you're maybe in an OC or definitely like a Yahoo 12 teamer where it's a lot more shallow, I had already dropped Rowdy in one of those, so I could see someone dropping Rizzo and not think twice about it.
Yep, these are the players we have to start dropping, folks. Like, go take the new hot toy. Go get Mike Ford while he's swinging it well. You'll enjoy it for a couple. I know I never thought I'd say those words in my life.
Former Yankee great Mike Ford.
Yep, former Yankee great. But yeah, play him for a few weeks until he fizzles out and then move on to the next guy. Play the streaming game for now, especially in those shallower like Yahoo formats. Like I tweet it out probably every couple weeks when I do my Yahoo article, and I'm like, my God, the roster rates on Yahoo, it's unbelievable in some of these leagues. Like, I feel bad writing up certain players because like most of us are so NFBC minded, there's no chance they're ever available in our leagues, and they're like 40% rostered in Yahoo and stuff. I know they're, because that takes into account 10 team leagues and all. I get it, but it just makes me go, wow, that's wild stuff over there. Anthony Rendon went on the IL retroactive to the 11th, so he's eligible to come off of the 21st with a shin contusion. Dude's always hurt. Hasn't really produced anyways to begin with, like, kind of like go to Brian Hayes' argument with less speed potentially if we want to. So I haven't been too aggressive on a guy like Anthony Rendon. I haven't really needed third base help, knock on wood, so it hasn't forced my hand. But what are your thoughts on a guy like Anthony Rendon?
He's also projected to come back this Friday, according to NFBC. But I'm out on him. I haven't been interested in drafting him in a long time, and in a shallow league, definitely do not keep Rendon. I don't think he's got much left. His best year was 2019, got that huge contract with the juice ball, and now he is just not very good. And he can't stay healthy either. So I would cut him and not be worried about doing so.
Yep. 100% with you on that one. Okay, here's the moment of silence for us and our teams, and this had to happen. I couldn't do it out the gate. We had to at least have a little fun to start the show. But I was kind of out of pocket most of the weekend, and I was driving back from somewhere on Sunday, and I opened Twitter up, and I see Ben's tweet pretty early on, and something about Rowdy Tellez breaking his finger, and I'm like, is this April Fool's? Like, what are we doing here? He was supposed to come back Tuesday, today. He was supposed to come back today, originally. And then he was shagging balls on Saturday and broke his ring finger. And you put a good like gif or picture out there. I'm thinking, did he Kevin Mitchell this thing? Like, what are we doing with this scenario? So we'll get to ad drops later, but I did drop him at least in one league this past week. Cause they're saying at least that I hear at least that's never good 3 to 4 weeks. Cause they got to let it heal and all that good stuff. What are you doing with our boy Rowdy Tellez?
Yeah, it's definitely been a sad couple of days with this news. I dropped him, as we'll get to eventually as well. And if you have an IL spot, I would just hold on to him because he showed us last year what he can do when he's clicking. But it's just been a lost year for Rowdy. I mean, which is weird because his April was so good. I think he had like 8 homers and was hitting around 250 and had decent runs and RBIs. And like he was going to be a great pick at where he was going. And then I wonder if the injury happened in May or at least June. And that's why he struggled so much after that hot April. And in that tweet, I said, was the fly ball an asteroid? I don't get how you break your finger bed, nail, like your nail bed on a fly ball. It was just like the icing on the cake for an awful year. And I hate to say it, but you can cut him because 3 to 4 weeks is a long time, and he wasn't doing anything before that either.
That's the biggest thing. He wasn't doing anything to begin with. 3 to 4 weeks is a long time. I know I'll be buying back into him next year because the underlying stats still look freaking good, and I can't figure out why he's not doing what he's doing. I'll be a sucker once again. Hopefully his ADP drops, but it was a bummer year, and this is why I love doing it on the show. I'll take my L's all day long. Give them to me. So Rowdy was one of them. That was a big one. Hopefully the rest of the Brewers, because they're heating up, so hopefully the rest of the Brewers start hitting some more and go. But yeah, Rowdy, you can drop him, move on. It does make Owen Miller viable probably for the rest of the season, like weirdly enough, because he's going to play a lot of first base.
With
the Brian Anderson injury and everything, it's like, out of all the people, he hasn't like been a world beater for fantasy, but Owen Miller's been serviceable, especially in deeper formats. It's pretty crazy to think about. Royce Lewis, this man, it's like, is there something in the water in Minnesota? Buxton, now Lewis, these young stud prospects, like they show us so much promise, and then they just can't stay healthy. It's the weirdest things with Royce Lewis. Now he gets a grade 2 oblique strain, obviously not good. They're hoping for mid-August. Oblique strains, you can't really put a fine timetable on that. We'll probably have more information soon on how he's recovering. But, man, Royce, are you holding him, hoping for like a month and a half out of him? Or are you just like, you know what, it ain't going to happen?
I think they definitely want to see if he can play. I mean, he got off to a great start this year. I mean, it's only 95 at bats, but even last year in 40 at bats, he showed some great potential, why he was like the big prospect for so many years. But kind of with what I was saying about Bieber, if he's your only injury, which is unlikely, then I would hold on to him if I can without an IL spot. But since it's going to be so long, the projected return, I would drop him otherwise. But which it stinks because he has third base and shortstop eligibility on NFBC. I'm sure he does on Yahoo. He probably has second base too for some reason, because that's how it is on Yahoo. And Yeah, it's unfortunate because he has so much talent, but he just can't stay healthy.
Yep, it's a shame. So, yeah, if you can hold him, great. Like you said, it's going to be pretty difficult to probably hold people right about now. So he's one that's going to have to go. And it's if you see some good news in a week or two, go pick him back up and see what you got to do. But he's going to be a tough one to hang on to for now. Kyle Wright, people were very optimistic about him coming back, and that kind of got pushed back a little bit as he's supposed to throw off a mound potentially this week. As of July 14th, he's close to being cleared to throw off a mound. He's been sidelined for 2 months with the right shoulder strain. There's no timetable still for his return. So it's one of those, like, they probably hope to have him back for some playoff help. They're not going to rush this. So Kyle Wright's a no for me. What about you?
Me too. He was someone I was stashing, and I wasted money, fat money, on doing so in a roster spot. And he's one of those guys who kept having the date pushed out. I would cut him. I already have.
He's the perfect example of things looked good, and then the pushback, and now it's time to see you later type situation. Garrett Whitlock, this is a fun one. I would say fun, being sarcastic. Hasn't started throwing as of July 14th. He had bone bruises. We've seen a lot of weird stuff going on with him all throughout this year. He keeps avoiding the big injury when you think he's going to have it. They're still estimating him to return at the beginning of August, which would be great. But it's like he comes back, looks good for a couple starts, then another injury here and there. So it's tough to see exactly what they're going to do. Like, Nick Pivetta is playing out of his mind right now. Tanner Houck might actually return before Whitlock. We'll talk about Houck in a little bit. So what are you doing with a guy like Garrett Whitlock? Because I cannot get a feel on even what to expect from him.
His note isn't too optimistic. He hasn't started throwing either as of the 14th, I think. So, yeah, he wasn't even that good overall this season when he was healthy. So he'd be closer to being a cut than a stash for me.
Okay, I'm kind of with you on that one as well. A couple Cincinnati Reds. Now this is where it gets fun because it's a team that is one of the best teams to watch in baseball. I don't know if it's like, if you just like baseball, it's absolutely amazing to watch these guys. They actually call up their young players, and they need pitching badly. And they had it earlier in the season, not so much now. Nick Lodolo, for one, the walking boot came off a couple of days ago, which is great. And that means he's going to start being able to ramp up throwing, which is awesome. Because the one thing I loved about Nick Lodolo, it had nothing to do with his arm. Nothing to do with his arm, which, like, unlike every other pitcher we've talked about, it was elbow, shoulder, something. This was just a dude that couldn't put pressure on his leg, which is scary. Mike Soroka could call you on that one. Not good. But Lodolo is supposed to start ramping up now. It'll still take some time, and basically spring training in essence. So they're thinking mid-August. With a talent like Lodolo, though, if you could get, say, 6 weeks, maybe gives you 5 or 6 starts because they'll slow play him, that could still be interesting. It is Great American Small Park, though, so how do you look at Nick Lodolo?
He's someone I would not really try to stash. I mean, like you mentioned, the talent's there. He's getting a ton of strikeouts this year. He seemed like he was trying to break out like people were hoping he would. I was looking at his stats. He gave up so many hits too. So I feel like it's location. It was more than just like the ballpark issue. I feel like it's like a pitching issue as well. And he's another one of those guys that has the mid-August return date. And if he gets a setback just for like an extra start, that's an extra week. Then it's almost September. So I know the talent's definitely there and the upside is there. But for me, I think I had a chance to add him at some point, at least in the main event. And I didn't because the return date was so far out, and it's still kind of far out for me. So personally, I would try to stash someone else if I was looking for a stash, but I get if you wanted to stash him because of his upside, I get it, but it's too far out for me.
So you'd rather Nasty Nestor than Lodolo?
As crazy as it sounds, you're probably right, Bubba.
I just want to make sure because I'm not disagreeing with you. The biggest thing for me is that ballpark. It's just it's a mess, and that's why I'm gonna sound like a hypocrite coming up here, because Hunter Green, his teammate, again, not an arm issue, thank God, a hip issue, a really weird one, because at first I was like, oh, he's just gonna miss a start, no big deal, and next thing you know, he's on the IL for like a month and a half. That made no sense. He's down there in their Arizona facility throwing. He has to do one more step, I guess, in his rehab, and then he's gonna be pretty much good to go. Everything is progressing as they planned for Cincinnati, which still hasn't targeted back around August 4th, which really a couple weeks away. Green is the epitome of Great American Small Park screwing over a guy. If you just look at his home road splits, like, he's dominated outside of Great American, and it's like your luck. It's a coin toss at best at home. So would you be willing to stash Hunter Green if available?
I would definitely prefer him to Lodolo just because of that, like you mentioned, the earlier estimated return date. I think Lodolo is probably a better pitcher potentially than Green. I mean, it's really close. They were basically going neck and neck in ADP. And yeah, to your point, at least it's not his arm or shoulder that was injured. But I could see why you would stash him. As long as he makes that rehab start on time, then I could see stashing him for the next week and a half roughly.
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
When it comes to weight management, we tend to put our focus on what we eat. But Noom's approach puts the focus on why we eat. And that's a game changer. Noom uses science and personalization so you can manage your weight for the long term. Their psychology-based approach helps you build better habits and behaviors that are easier to maintain. And they help you understand the science behind your eating choices and why you have those cravings. Noom's personalized courses are easy to follow and will help grow your confidence with tools you can put into practice on day one. The best part? You decide how Noom fits into your life, not the other way around. And based on a sample of 4,272 Noomers, 98% say Noom helps change their habits and behaviors for good. Try Noom today and see the results for yourself. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com to sign up for your trial today.
Yeah, he's a little more appealing. I will definitely agree with that. Well, we talked about non-throwing issues. Well, let's talk about a shoulder again. Jose Urquidy. He completed his first rehab assignment over the weekend, 32 pitches, 22 of them were strikes, went two innings, two runs, none earned, a walk, and two Ks. That's kind of what you want to see out of a guy in his first rehab start. He's scheduled to have another rehab start on Wednesday. So that's another plus for Jose Urquidy. I guess if all goes well, maybe one more after that. So this is one of those – about 10 to 14 days, maybe less. Maybe they say, you know what, he went four innings, we'll bring him back, let him throw five or six with the Astros. We'll see. So you might even get him back next week. So what are your thoughts on Jose Urquidy, who wasn't having as dominant a season as we had the previous year?
No, it's definitely been his worst season statistically in his career so far. But the close or like the proximity to his return is what makes him appealing, I think. But I remember just going into the season, he definitely seemed to outperform his expected stats last season. So to see him regress to like the five ERA isn't too surprising. But the way pitching is, he's not going to go back to the Astros. So he'll probably get some wins. I definitely prioritize stashing him over some of the other guys we talked about. Definitely. But with the risk of not the best ratios, because his walk rate was really bad this year. I think it was like 10 walks in 20 something innings. So that's not too good. But yeah. If you need pitching help, he's someone I would definitely stash right now.
Yeah, no, I'm kind of with you on that one. I'm not in love with Urquidy, but we've seen the promise. It's the best way I'll put it, and hopefully you can find it for a stretch run on a very good team, very, very good team in the Astros. Yoan Moncada, I think we've done this dance many times with Yoan Moncada. He's due back any day now with his, once again, back injury. I've just given up hope on Yoan Moncada. I could be just naive. It's some of those guys I'll be okay being wrong on, and Moncada's one of them now. So what's your thoughts on Yoan Moncada?
This one kind of stinks because he started out the season so hot. He was hitting 300 in April. I had him in one of my main events, and I had to cut him because of the first back injury. But, yeah, I would not be interested in stashing him. I mean, if he's available and no one adds him and he starts hitting, then definitely scoop him back up, see if he gets hot. But Berger's been holding down third base pretty well for them. And yeah, he just hasn't been good the last 2 years. Like sub 400 slugging, sub 300 on base, an average under 250 both years. He's kind of been a bust since he was that Red Sox prospect. So yeah, I wouldn't be too interested in adding him right now.
With you on that. If you need some outfield help, a little bit of power, a little bit of speed, not a much batting average, Ramon Laureano could be coming back to you shortly. He took BP over the weekend, so he'll start rehabbing. They're hoping to have him back either this weekend or beginning of next week. If all goes well for Oakland, he'll slot right back into the middle of the order, most likely, where he was before. I don't know if he's ever going to be the guy he was a few years ago when we had high 2020 type hopes for Laureano, but there is something there, and the A's are bringing up prospects that can hit, so maybe there's a little more offense coming. Who knows? Nick Pivetta would say no, but we'll see there. So what's your thoughts on Ramon Laureano and his return?
So right now NFBC has him back for next Tuesday, the 25th, which is just in time to trade him if it all goes well.
That's true.
He's someone that every year, because I'm a big projections guy when it comes to draft time. And
he stands out.
He always is an appealing target and like pick 250 with that 2015 potential. And he keeps letting me down in my draft champion leagues the last 2 years. I'm definitely not gonna draft him next year, but yeah, he's just keeps underperforming. And if he stays on the A's, then he wasn't even hitting like top three for a while. I think I remember he was hitting like fifth or sixth way too often for how good he's supposedly is. So yeah, I mean, he has the upside, but I would not prioritize adding him back. I just don't think he's that good anymore.
Yeah. He's not one of my top targets. It seems like there's enough like streaming outfielders out there. Like, would you rather have Matt Vierling or Ramon Laureano? Like, that's actually a real question.
I actually have Matt Vierling on a team.
That's my point. Like, would you have a Corey Jolks than Laureano? Like Chaz McCormick, depending on your format, these guys are available over Ramon Laureano. So these are names you probably never would have thought of on draft day, but are probably much more relevant than Ramon Laureano at this point in time.
With those three guys, Vierling is kind of getting out of that lefty platoon that he was kind of in, I think, for a while. He's starting to play every day, even though he's lower in the lineup against righties, but he's still producing. And like with the Astros, between Myers, Jolks, McCormick, Dubon, like it's like an outfield merry-go-round with all those guys. And it seems like Jolks is the hot hand for now, but I mean, for how long? And then with Yordan coming back, so it's not the best, but I would probably put Laureano at the bottom of those, of the list of four names.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm with you there, 100%. And the Astros thing is frustrating because they all seem to produce when they're playing. Just when are they going to play is the million-dollar question. A couple more here. Tanner Houck, nasty comebacker to the face, had surgery, plates put into his face. Like, he's the robotic man now. He's already throwing off flat ground, supposed to throw off a mound in about a week. And they're expecting him back in early August, right back into the rotation. Like, they're saying everything's good to go. Like, he feels fine throwing off of flat ground and everything. I guess it's more a matter of, for me, it'd be between the ears, going on the mound and being like, okay, like I'm confident that I can pitch and not get drilled in the face again. That's got to be terrifying. So Houck was pitching really well before he went down. I shouldn't say really well before he went down. So would he be a guy you'd be looking to stash out of all these starting pitchers we've been talking about?
He definitely has one of the earlier estimated return dates for August 1st. At least he didn't hurt his arm or anything, so that's a positive. But yeah, I was going to say, and you already said about the between the ears, is he going to be skittish on the mound? Maybe he doesn't like want to go inside, or well, probably in his case, throw on the outside corner of the plate to a righties or anyone in general. Hopefully not having a comebacker back at him again. But if you can afford that one spot, he did have some good games. I was just checking his game log before he got hurt. He had a couple clunkers, but nothing too terrible. So I could see he'll definitely go back into the bullpen, into the rotation, like we alluded to, because the Red Sox have like three actual starters right now. So, yeah, I mean, maybe don't start him right away to see how he looks in his first start when he comes back. But he's probably a higher priority pitcher ad, I would say, or pitcher stash in this case.
100%. Like, out of all the guys we talked about, I'd be near the top of the dudes to try to target there. Now, Sale's pretty darn good. I'm not going to say that. But Houck, one of the quickest to return out of the bunch. Like, he's probably right after Urquidy. I'd rather have Houck than Urquidy, personally. So we'll kind of see how all that plays out. Anybody else you'd like to discuss? I'm not even going to bring up the man I wrote down there because I realize that's just a waste of time. But anybody else? Because there's a ton. Like, I'll ask you this question. I didn't put him on here. I originally had him on our keep cut list. It's a battle I had all last weekend, and I told myself I'm going to wait for more information. Thyro Estrada. This is a nasty one, and everyone knows my love for Thyro on this show. He's been amazing for my teams. So it's part of it's the bias. Part of it's if he's back in the 3 to 4 weeks, okay, can I hang on to him that long? I'm already like a week and a half in now. But at the same time, as like swelling goes down, they still haven't ruled out a surgery yet. That's the part I'm waiting on. Like, I need that final info, and they haven't gone there yet. So I ask you, Ben, if you're a Thyro Estrada owner, are you keeping or cutting? He's still 78% rostered in OCs.
I happen to be a Thyro Estrada owner, and I still have him.
So
he's on that main event I was mentioning earlier that had Harvey and Romano and Gossman on it. So he's just been too good when he's been in the lineup. And going off of the projected return date on NFBC, it's the 5th of August. So it's probably like 2 weeks now. But I think that's probably going off of the optimistic of the 4 to 6. I mean, if we get information that he's going to need surgery, like you said, then he's definitely a drop, unfortunately. But yeah, I have him in a couple other spots too. And he was kind of like in that fallback range with India, where if you waited to get a second baseman, I felt like it was a great pick there. And he's definitely, he was on pace for like 2040 almost, yeah, if he stayed healthy and with a good average. I mean, I know he had been slumping lately, but his average dropped to from like over 300 to 272. But I think that was bound to happen. He wasn't going to hit 300 all year. No. But he's been everything he asked for, and it definitely stinks. But I'm going to keep him for now. Like I kind of alluded to, I have my injuries are mounting in that team. But he's high on the list for me of someone to keep.
Yeah, that's where I'm at. It's basically until I am forced because of some other ungodly injury to some other player, Tyro's going to stick on my rosters for now. And I'm going to do everything in my power to keep him on my team because even like a month of Tyro, that could get you 8 more stolen bases potentially. Like, he's gonna run because the hand thing might affect whatever little power he did have, but he could still hit for average, potentially get on base and score a ton of and then steal bases. So it to me, it's worth, you're not going to find a replacement like that on the waiver wire very often. So I'm going to hang on as long as possible until more news potentially comes out. That's all I'm waiting for now. All right, let's recap some fab names here. Then we'll recap our ad and drops of the week. The reason I hope this was helpful to the listeners because it's just more of like a therapy session. It's kind of working the process through your head on who to add, who to drop. Because you see it all over Twitter and other shows, like, hey, this guy's worth a stash. This guy's coming back soon, so on and so forth. Well, is it worth it? That's the kind of, at least from our opinions, we gave you our thoughts on the scenario. So hopefully that was helpful, a little exercise for you. But we'll do NFBC 12-team OCs ad drops as usual here. Added in 100. This is what's great. If you guys follow McCabe on Twitter, he puts out all these stats from waiver wires for main event and OCs. And he mentioned how like the amount of people just not bidding right now is dropping fast, real fast, especially in OCs. And this is a great example. Zach Geloff, one of the top prospects for the A's, got called up and he was only added in 100 leagues. There's more than 100 OCs, folks. Just throwing that out there to you. And this is the only player in OCs added in triple digit leagues this week. So this is where we are. He went as high as 133, as low as a dollar. People spending 133, it's because you have money and you want to guarantee your guy right about now. It's the only thing I can think of. Since the call-up, he's hit safely in 3 of 4 games, 2 doubles, got 2 stolen bases. The production of the minor struck out a lot, but power and a ton of speed. Out of the Soderstrom-Geloff combo, I was team Geloff this week if I need one of the two. I'll just package them together. What were your thoughts on Geloff and Soderstrom? Soderstrom's the other Oakland A's for the listeners out there that got called up. He's a first base catcher. He's first base eligible on NFBC. Geloff's second base eligible. He'll be second, third, most likely at some point. So what was your thoughts on those two?
I kind of missed the Geloff train. I forget when they got announced yet who's going to get called up. But it was with Soderstrom. So I didn't know it was happening, but I didn't put any bids in. And it's kind of, that's on me. I had a busy weekend, but it's no excuse. Can't neglect your fantasy teams. But yeah, he had 69 games, 20 steals, over 300 average this year in AAA. It is the PCL, so it's a hitter-friendly environment. He had 12 homers, so good power speed. I don't know where he, no, he's batting leadoff or second at least. So he's definitely going to get plate appearances, at least the last three games, second, first and second. That's where he's batted. So yeah, he's a definitely a good add if you need some speed. And then with Soderstrom, he actually was my rowdy replacement in my main event. Just hoping for one of those like late season guys that get hot and don't kill your average, hopefully. But I know he has a strikeout problem, Soderstrom, but needed to replace Rowdy's empty stats anyway. So, yeah, I think Gelof is probably the better add of the two, but I mean, it really comes down to what you need.
Yeah, Gelof was, we'll get to our add drops. He was a target in all of my leagues for the most part because I need a ton of middle infield help right now, where I didn't need a ton of corner infield help. And that's just where I was. So it wasn't like, not that I didn't like Soderstrom, but right now it's about getting real picky on your team needs, not just stashing certain plug. You can stash the injured guys like we talked about, but just loading up and all of a sudden you have like five outfielders on your bench and nowhere else, that's going to kill you. So adding the Soderstrom was doing me like no good in most formats. So he just didn't come on down, basically.
See, I kind of have the same issue. I feel like my middle infield is stronger in general on my teams than a corner, but
yeah,
maybe it's just my perceived my perception right now.
That was the one thing I did. During the break, I tried to just kind of take my mind away from things for a few days, but I had like a couple hours one afternoon, and I sat down on my three OC teams, just my OCs, not my other teams, just my three OCs, and I looked at the standings, where I could potentially improve, and then I looked at my team and the biggest holes I had. I started just making like, these are the guys, the tough cuts are coming, and these are the guys I have to go. Like, Tim Anderson was on a lot of lists, just going to put it that way. Like, it's about go time for you, Timmy boy. Next up, added in 70 leagues, Aroldis Chapman, as high as 203, as low as a dollar. He got traded to Texas recently, as most know. Picked up the win on Monday, picked up the save on Saturday. And if you look at Chapman's numbers, he has not given up an earned run since June 17th. Prior to that, May 30th, he's been really good. The strikeouts are back. He has not walked a batter since June 20th. Like, he's looking like Chapman of old. That could obviously derail at any moment. I'm not going to say it's not, but he has been a guy that I've been slowly kind of, he hasn't been like a priority each week for me, but in certain leagues where there isn't a starting pitcher I like or something, he's been on the waterfalls for sure. What's your thoughts on Aroldis Chapman? Because the fact that he had a chance at a save and Will Smith was available was very telling to me over the weekend.
It's kind of wild that he's, well, I say it from my perspective as a Yankee fan, that he's actually good again, because he was just so bad for those last couple of years. And I was happy when he was gone because I thought he wasn't able to throw a strike ever again, but still walking a decent amount of batters. I mean, when you said he hasn't walked a guy since June, whatever, I was kind of shocked to hear that. I didn't realize that's the case. I think I mentioned it before on your podcast, but I follow this website, Twitter account, whatever you want to call it, Closer Monkey. And when he got traded from the Royals to the Rangers, they immediately switched it into a committee. And I was kind of like, really? I mean, he wasn't closing for the Royals and Will Smith had been so good, but they were right because I feel like it's a 50-50 split, which is weird because they're both lefties.
Yeah, it's really weird.
Yeah, so I doubt either one has a reverse split that would make it make sense. But yeah, he's everything on his FanGraphs right now looks great and it supports how well he's throwing. His walk rate's actually down from the last two seasons, which is kind of funny since his walk per nine is 5.09 this year. But yeah, it was 6.9 for the Yankees last year. That was awesome. I saw way too many fastballs hit the backstop with him pitching.
He was the definition of Rick Wild Thing Vaughn, that's for sure.
Yeah, and I mean his K's are back up because they created last year because he was striking out 10.65 for nine last year. He's back up to 16, which is his highest since 2020. But yeah, so if you need saves, where I do, he's not available. But yeah, I mean, if you're okay with like a part-time for your RP3, if you're in a 12-teamer, then definitely go get him.
Yep, 100%. I think he's going to be a guy that ratios right now, he's actually helping you in. He's going to get you strikeouts, and he's sneaking in wins and saves. So if you need one of those guys, as we talk about, some of these two-step guys are nasty, so it is in play. Matt Manning picked up in 70 leagues, as high as $28, as low as $1. He had a two-step this week. He's come back from the IL on June 27th, and it's been a good run so far for Manning. He had some decent rehab starts also, but he's got at least five innings in all four starts, two earned runs or less in three of the four starts. The strikeouts could be better, I'll say that much. Two starts, he had zero walks. The other starts, he had walk issues. It's an up-and-down peripheral. Like, you look at the ERA indicator is not great. It's just depends on what you want to look at with Manning, but it was a great matchup versus the Royals. He pitched well, didn't get a ton of strikeouts, pitched well. And he seemed like a two-step option. That's why he's very popular this week. What do you think about Matt Manning?
So I have his Fangraphs open. He has a 5.97 K per nine, which is not very good. That's contributing to his high estimators, his FIPS 4.7 almost, XFIPS 5.48. I would say the XFIPS higher because he has a 36.6 ground ball rate. So a lot of fly balls, projecting for a lot of home runs. So that's over two runs higher than his actual ERA of 3.12. So I feel like, after that no hitter, I think people just saw that on the surface and like, oh wow, he's a former prospect, had a no hitter going. But yeah, I would not get my hopes up too high if I added him for good ratios going forward.
Yeah, no, we'll get to my ad drops. He was not a target of mine, a main target. I did get him in a few leagues, primarily where I need accumulating stats. We'll see how that works because he didn't really accumulate many stats. He will be dropped after this week, 100% dropped after this week. I'm just I'm towing the tightrope right now is the way this was going.
You got to do it sometimes.
You have to. It was not warm and fuzzy because there wasn't a lot of options this week. But this man was Nick Pivetta, picked up in 69 leagues, as high as 41, as low as a dollar. Before last night, we'll get to that in a minute. He's been doing the piggyback roll since June 28th. Last night was his fourth piggyback roll. Coming into last night, he had thrown a total of 12 in the third innings. But what I loved about it, it was 7Ks, 6Ks, 8Ks. He was getting dudes, striking guys out, giving up a couple runs, not getting crushed. I could live with the ratios for the strikeout upside. Well, on Monday night, for those sleeping under a rock, Pivetta threw six no-hit innings with two walks and 13 strikeouts. It was ridiculous. He now has 34 Ks over his 18 in the third innings as a piggyback guy, 2.45 ERA and a 1.86 XFIP as a piggyback. I don't know what it has been, but it's a mentality for certain guys. Like Ryan Yarbrough did it that one year. All of a sudden he could piggyback, pick up all the wins, looked great. It's only four appearances. We know Pivetta can blow up with the best of them. But my goodness, last 4 days, I won't even just say last 4 days, have been very good for Pivetta, and it could be interesting going forward. So what's your thoughts on Nick Pivetta?
Do you know who he faced in those four games?
Yes, I got him right here.
I have it up too.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Miami at Toronto and then Oakland. So, yeah, it's not. Nice. It was cookie cutter. Yes, it was cookie cutter. The Toronto. Give Toronto a little credit. We'll go there.
Okay. Well, I'll give him credit for that one. No. He was someone I definitely had in my claim list in the last couple of weeks as like a starting pitcher replacement for those bulk innings. But for the show, he's just always underperformed the expectations for him. He's never had an ERA under four in his career in any season. He's kind of pitching like a starter now. So it's not like he's even to the point of like a one or two inning guy where he can go all out. Like if they want him to get these long outings each time, then he's just a starter still. So honestly, I don't know if he's a pitch mix change or something that's kind of fueling it. I mean, his opponents, like we pointed out, definitely fueling some of the success. But I had his underlying stats here. Let me get them up. But yeah, so I think definitely a lot of his year-to-date stats are baked into this as a starter. But like his estimators are all above four. I know, like you mentioned, how good he's been the last four outings, but I want to see him do it against someone who's not the Marlins or the A's before I am confident that he's actually going to be the pitcher we always thought he was going to be or hoped he was going to be.
Very, very fair on that one. We'll go through a couple more here because we're at the point of the year now where it's like this guy's at like 30 to 40 leagues, just kind of like convenience pickups for the most part. But I'll do a couple more that are added over 60 leagues here. Kerry Carpenter was added at 64 leagues, as high as 36, as low as a dollar. Carpenter has been a fun one. I've streamed him from time to time, then I'll drop him and you stream him. Came out of the All-Star game, hit three home runs in the first two games. He's hit safely in all four games out of the break. We know there's power in that bat. He's hitting for average right now. It is Detroit, so, you know, I guess caution. But what's your thoughts on a guy like Kerry Carpenter? We kind of joked about Matt Vierling earlier. Carpenter, I guess, could be thrown out of discussion as well.
They're hitting back-to-back in the Tigers lineup, fourth and fifth. Carpenter actually started the last game against a lefty, which is that's good to see because he was platooning, I think, for a while. I remember hearing about him as a popular ad. So if you need power, I could definitely see adding him. He's a sleeper that going into the year, too. But, yeah, so if he plays against lefties going forward, I could see him being a decent add.
For sure. Kyle Finnegan was added in 63 leagues, high as 32. That's pretty simple. He's going to be closing for the Nationals. There's not rocket science on that one. The last one I wanted to ask you about here, because he's the last guy that was 50 leagues or more.
With Finnegan, real quick, he might only be at the closer for 13 more days.
That's a great point.
Yeah.
And in that regard, let's have a little fun with this for a second then. I was looking at this the other day. Actually, Mike Kirlin was looking at this. He mentioned it on the last show. He was already stashing this player, I'm pretty sure, is who I'm going to mention. So he's had his week to stash, and he mentioned it live on the show. So, hey, that's on you guys if you still sat around. But Mason Thompson is currently the main set. I mean, he got the hold on Monday night when Finnegan got the save. Kirlin was raving about Mason Thompson. I don't know if you've done any work on Mason Thompson, but if you once Kirlin mentioned, I looked at him some more. There's a lot to like there with Mason Thompson.
We'll get to him when we do our ads.
Excellent. We will get there shortly. Okay. Last one I want to mention then, because this is one that a couple weeks ago I somehow missed it when Christopher Sanchez came up with Philadelphia. He came back up on the 24th, and he's been in the rotation ever since. But he was added in 50 leagues this past week, as high as $35, as low as a buck. He doesn't like light the world on fire for me, but it's 5 innings, 3 earned runs or less. He's basically Matt Manning with maybe a little better skills, it looks like. That's kind of the way I'm going to look at it, like when you just look at his, you know, stats and player page and whatever. So what's your thoughts on Christopher Sanchez?
I was definitely interested in him when he first got moved into the rotation. I remember seeing after his first game, I think it was, or second game. Yeah, after those first couple starts, he looked pretty good. And do you know – I'm not sure who he's replacing currently in the rotation, but
That's what I was confused at. That's why I missed it originally, because I'm like, did someone go down in Philadelphia that I totally just blanked on? I do stuff every single day. How did I miss this one? So
yeah, I'm looking at him. Bring up the roster resource.
Walker, Ranger Suarez. I don't see anybody unless someone got demoted. But Bailey Falter.
Yes.
Bailey Falter. That's what it was.
But he's been gone for a while, so I think that – well, they also had Strom in the rotation for a while too.
So this probably is one of a more stable fifth instead of – because they were kind of like doing bullpenny type with Strom and company. That's probably what it was.
Yeah, so he was – I was interested in him. Not – I mean, he's been added in my leagues where I was looking at him. But, yeah, he was on my ad list definitely when he was available. He only has a – looking at his stats now, a 1.48 walk per nine, which is phenomenal. His – XERA is 3.82, his FIPS 4.14, which is fine. I mean, it's an estimator, and XFIPS 3.37, which is phenomenal. So I think a lot of that's driven by his ground ball rate, which is 54%. And BABIP's a little low, 247, so expect that to regress up a little bit. His left on base is 78.3, which is perfectly normal, so that's fine. So maybe like a mid-threes ERA going forward, assuming he's six. I like Sanchez a lot.
All righty. Let's talk about our fab pickups for the week. What you got? As you've hinted at a few guys, I can't wait to hear the explanation now.
All right. Well, he's near the top of the list. So first, we have my main event. One of my main events, 15 team league. I alluded to this on the last time I was on, and so this might be a little talking point. But I added Brandon Bielak. When I added him, or I put my claims in, he was projected to face the A's. Now he's in Colorado, so. He's going to show up a few times on my teams, which is kind of unfortunate, but he might stick around when Urquidy gets back, but I'm not sure. So I added Bielak for $14, runner up of one. I dropped Scott Barlow. Then I added Drew Smyly, $14. The first start wasn't great, good strikeouts, for $14 as well, runner up of 13. So that was a good add for now, dropping Evan Phillips. So this is the main event where I finally punted saves. Then I also added Jared Triolo, $2, dropping Brian Anderson, no backup. Added Joey Wendell, dropped Ronel Blanco, $2, no backup. And then I added Hector Neris, dropping Kyle Wright on that league, $1, no backup. So that team is in full save punt mode. My other main event, once again, added Bielak, $12, dropped right off of this main event as well, no backup. This is where I added Tyler Soderstrom, dropping Rowdy, rest in peace, $8, no backup. And then this is where I added Mason Thompson. So I added Mason Thompson, dropped Mark Leiter Jr., $6, no runner-up. All these ads were no runner-up, so I could have spent $1, $4, and I got all these guys. It's kind of
That's so annoying. Frustrating, man.
Yeah, I mean, luckily the bids were low to begin with, but, I mean, at this point in the year, it's like bidding $50 probably. So I added Mason Thompson. He was someone that earlier in the year when you're looking for – when it was real bad pitching-wise, he was doing really well. He was getting like 4 or 5 Ks a week. He was just in a middle relief role. And I've messaged Kirlin on and off on Twitter throughout the season. And recently he brought him back up to me because I was in on, he was in my like reliever claims early on, and I just never got him. I had other guys prioritized. But yeah, I got him to replace Hunter Harvey on this main event, which definitely hurt when I saw that he was injured. So hopefully, like I mentioned with Finnegan before, hopefully he gets traded and then Thompson steps in or Harvey comes back for this team's sake. Shout out to Curlin for reminding me of Mason. But yeah, he's a good spec play. And then last ad for here was Bryce Terang dropping Isaiah Kiner-Falefa. Streamed him for the Rockies series and he did nothing. $2 drop, no backup. Then we have last two are quick. My main event qualifier, Bielak again. I had him on 3 of 4 fab leagues in NFBC. Dropped Paul Blackburn, who I feel like he's fizzling out. $16, no backup. Added Ryan Nelson, dropped Mike Tauchman, $4, no backup. Finally, TGFBI. Added Edward Julian, $10, dropping Paul Blackburn with a $7 backup. So that was a good add. I feel like hopefully he sticks if Polanco comes back. But like we alluded to, he might lose some playing time. So we'll see. He had a good, I think he had 7 righties this week. So it was a good week to add him. And I like this ad too, not to toot my own horn, but I got Tyler O'Neill for $8, dropping Rowdy again, $8, $3 backup. So hopefully O'Neill starts and
He wasn't in today's lineup, unfortunately. I was looking for it because I'm with you. I didn't put him in my NFC lineups yet. I'm waiting until the weekend. I want to see him play a game or two. Rehab, he actually did good, hitting for a little bit of power. That was good to see. I started specking on him a week or so ago, similar to the Nesters and stuff. I guess I was looking at my teams recently, like I said, and it's like, okay, do I want to go gamble on this young kid, or do I want to go take this guy that's proven? It's been a rough year, but proven. Get him cheap, and his ceiling's probably higher. That's where my head was at. So O'Neill was one of those guys for sure for me. And you dropped a bunch of guys that I've been dropping well, so this makes me feel a little better. And the runner-up things, I'm with you. And OCs, it's even worse. So my first OC here, I got Zach Geloff, dropped Andy Ibanez 7-2. So that made me feel good to get him for $7. Somebody in this league added Anthony DeSclafani for $97 with no runner-up bid. I just died. And then someone added Dean Kramer for 79. OCs, my friends. OCs. I literally want to know on the DeSclafani one, did they just accidentally hit a second number, maybe? This is the only thing I think of, because I don't know where you ever thought that was necessary. I added Reese Olson, dropped Paul Blackburn 4-0. I think Reese Olson's the real deal when it comes to strikeouts and everything. I'm curious to see what he's going to do coming up. I dropped him a while back because it looked like he was going to be out of the rotation or going to the bullpen or something. Now he's back for now, I'll say. Detroit's always a kind of a moving picture in this scenario, but last time out, 5 1/3, 2-run, 5 Ks at Seattle. Oakland, he had 5 Ks. He had 9 Ks against Minnesota, 8 against Kansas City. He's going like 5 innings. If I can get that kind of production, I'll take it for now. And then I added Matt Manning. This one hurt, but this is why OCs are what they are. And I'll look to add him back this weekend. I didn't need corner infield. He's been sitting on my bench. He's going to help somebody else out, but I dropped Tristan Casas 4-2. I love Casas a lot. I said nowhere to play. I'm not playing him at all. And that's the point of the year where it's like, I need bodies I'm using. And that's kind of a thing we've been trying to mention a lot on this show, is these are the tough cuts. I did not want to drop Casas, but it's like, okay, I need pitching depth. I need to accumulate stats. I'll take the 2-start guy for a week and drop Casas and see if I can hopefully get him back next week. We'll see. I have like $180 in that league, which is high right now. So I could be a little aggressive on Casas if I really want him back. I still don't even know if I need him. That's the thing. And my next OC added Zach Geloff. Geloff dropped Andy Ibanez 7-1. Edward Julian drops Rowdy Tellez 6-4. Added Owen Miller. This one hurts because no news until frickin' Monday afternoon. Added Owen Miller for $4, runner up a 2, dropped Jaimer Candelario. I'll be going right back to adding Jaimer Candelario next week. I love Jaimer, and there was no optimistic reports when I was looking all over the place. And yeah. Then added Matt Manning, dropped Aaron Civale 4-1. Savali's good, but they're empty stats for the most part. So wasn't helping me at all. And then in my OC1, added Geloff, dropped the Banyas 8-4, added Julian, dropped Max Kepler 8-0. Added Miles Mikolas, dropped JP Sears 4-0. Sears is good. It's you look at the profile, it's a roller coaster ride with JP Sears. And then I added Nick Pivetta in this league, dropped Dean Kramer 4-0. That panned out well. The week before in this league, here's my stash this league. Week before, added Tyler O'Neill, added Zach Neto, added Nestor Cortez. Those are my 3 ads the previous week. They were all on the IL when I added them. Neto is the only one that's returned. The second league added O'Neill the week before. I just wanted to see this real quick. I knew I'd added him a few times. Yeah, I got him in 2 of my 3 OCs so far. So definitely in on that one. All right, let's talk listener questions here. I actually didn't have any TGFBI ads. I wasn't ignoring it. The guys I was in on, I got outbid on all of them. And I was just like, well, there goes that concept. Because there's that 15-team league out of all my 15s. It's picked apart pretty good. I'm actually impressed with the people in that league. Like, it's surprising. Surprising. Like, it's pretty bare. All right. Dave Petros Yellow's got a couple questions for us. I just picked up Pivetta and two OCs this week. Congrats. I knew who he pitched against last night, but I feel pretty good about it right now. And also, Toby has him on his second overall OC, so that makes me like it even more. What's a realistic expectation rest of the season? You kind of mentioned it. It's fair to say there's some underlying things that'll make you feel warm and fuzzy, but you never know. Maybe this role's good for him. We'll see.
Just keep rolling him out there for now. He'll probably have a blow up eventually against, like, yep. I don't know, the Yankees. All teams, because the Yankees are just, they're just awful. Exactly. But
when you least expect it, it's one of those teams. Never fails. His other question was, what's a realistic, John Gray. I feel you here, Dave. Hasn't been good since the blister. I need him back to his May form. Is it going to happen? Maybe not that good, but what are we expecting? I agree. I can't figure it out, because if they're rolling him out here, the blister should be fixed, but he's nowhere near the guy he was before that blister injury. So it's wondering, like, is it not fully healed? So he can't put the same pressure on the finger. Like, something ain't right. And I haven't dug into all the movements of pitches and all the spins and everything. Maybe it's in there somewhere, but he has been broken since that blister injury.
Yeah, he's someone I don't have on any team, so I haven't been in tune with what's going on with him. But I looked up the July stats for the pitch for all pitchers, and looking at, like, their underlying numbers. So Gray has a 0 K minus walk percentage in July. So he has 11.1% K rate, 11.1% walk rate. So as you and Ryan allude to, that is not good. His swinging strike rate in July is 5.5%, which is very bad. His FIP is 5.95, XFIP 4.99. So yeah, I can see why Dave is concerned. I mean, it could be healed, but he's worried about reopening it or something. So he's like gripping the ball differently. But if you look at his year numbers, he has a 7.18 K per nine, which is about 2 Ks below what he was the last two seasons. I don't know if that's really just dropped over the last couple of weeks. I mean, I feel like it hasn't. It's probably been a year-long trend where his Ks are down. And his year-to-date expected stats, besides what I just read with his XFIP and FIP, they're still above 4. So I feel like he's getting lucky with that 3.45 ERA. I mean, maybe in the right matchups, start him for now if he's getting bombed. But, yeah, I feel like there's something off with him still, considering how poorly he's pitched this month.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's kind of what we were saying, is there's something with the – I don't know if it's fully healed, because he's not using it. I think he's not using the finger the same way. That's my guess on this whole scenario. And a little Book of Calm has a question. In a 12-teamer, standard 5x5, how would you rank these guys rest of season? Sonny Gray, who's been less than ideal. John Gray, just mentioned. Griffin Canning, good start last night. Still, the previous couple starts were not great. And then Bobby Miller, who's been interesting as well. Would you consider any or all of them essentially just streamers? So how would you rank them? And then are any of them streamers?
So going off of, I know Curlin has Gray, so I've heard about him all year. Year to date, his underlying numbers still look great. The thing with Gray is, all these guys kind of have an issue. Gray and actually both Grays is injury related. Sonny never seems to pitch a full season, but I mean, at this pace, he's going strong still. I mean, he's kind of fizzling out, but I think I put him first. Then I have Bobby Miller second. I know he's had a couple of rough starts lately, but looking at his minor league career and what he's done this year in the majors, he's 50 innings still from his career high. So I don't think they're going to shut him down or send him down like we're seeing with Yuri Perez. His underlying numbers are the second best of the four that Little Book of Calm mentioned. So Gray, Bobby Miller, and then I'm kind of indifferent between Griffin, Canning, and John Gray. We just touched on John Gray's issues. And, Canning, like, he was someone I added earlier in the year, but he's kind of just, like, he has that potential, and then he kind of disappoints. It's been his thing for his career. So, I mean, I would consider Canning and Gray streamers if you have them. Bobby Miller start most often. I mean, most starts if you have him, and I still think Gray has the potential to right the ship. But, yeah, that's how I'd rank him.
Yeah, Sonny Gray is the best of the bunch, and I don't like, and he's very frustrating because it's like one inning every start that he just ruins the whole day. So like I can't remember if I started him this week or not, even on two-step, because I didn't like the matchups, but I've kept him. I think Canning and Bobby Miller and even John Gray. Canning's probably more of a streamer. He's probably fourth on the list I'll go with. John Gray and Bobby Miller, I use the term bench streamer. That's where I would go. Like, I wouldn't want to drop them, but I'm definitely not starting them every week. That because especially with Bobby Miller, it's we've seen the good, but we've seen some young bad things too with him. So maybe you run him out there for a little bit longer. But John Gray for sure bench streamer, because I'm just waiting for him to find it. I'm hopelessly optimistic, I guess. But maybe it's the biasy thing we talked about earlier all over again. But yeah, Sonny Gray is the best out of the bunch. All right, that'll do it, my friend. Any final thoughts as we have another week of the season in the books?
Yeah, so I just want to wrap up the whole injury thing that we were going over. So if you listen to other podcasts talking to listeners, you probably hear Scott Pianowski mention and how he's always don't go after injuries. And I've been guilty of that this year. And sounds like even Bubba with his ads the other week with Tyler O'Neill, Nestor, and Nito. But I just wanted to highlight some guys. I looked through my preseason rankings and guys who kind of had injury concerns to start the year. I'm going to make this quick, but Tristan McKenzie, Kyle Wright, Carlos Rodon, Seiya Suzuki, Polanco got injured in spring training. Tyler Molly had shoulder issues in spring training. Jose Altuve got hurt in spring training. Raul Mondesi, Tyler Glasnow was hurt. And those are the guys who were hurt in spring training. And what have they all done this year? I know Altuve got hurt again, but you never know. That could have been a product of his previous injury. Maybe he was favoring whatever he had hurt in the beginning. I forget what it was. So I think it was lower body. Suzuki's back, but he's not performing well. He's been dropped in 12-teamers. I think even a 15, he's been dropped. Rodon just got back, and like people were hoping for a May return. Nestor, he was healthy to start the year. He kind of falls in with the Trevor Rogers camp, though. Like, Rogers was someone that we were waiting for to come back, and he keeps getting pushed out. He hurt his lat somehow, and now he can't pitch because of it. Tyler O'Neill, I feel like he kept getting pushed out. But the point of naming all those guys is that if they're hurt, don't think they're going to be the best pick. Because when I drafted Tristan McKenzie in the main event, it was the night after he left to start early and we didn't know what the injury was. I'm like, well, I'll take him like pick 260. I held him the entire year. I missed his best start of the year. Started him when he got bombed against the Guardians. It was a good matchup. He got bombed and he hurt his elbow. So the injury optimism usually always wins. I mean, you always lose out for the most part if you're optimistic with an injury. The only hits that I thought of, there could be more, were Iglesias and Musgrove. Iglesias had the shoulder injury, and he's been fine since he came back. Musgrove, it was his toe, but he had a little rocky start, but he's been pretty good since then. And then I know this is a big debate in Twitter, but the injury risks. DeGrom, Jazz, Eloy, Sale, Fairbanks are the five that I highlighted. They're always hurt. They're hurt again. I know you. It's possible.
Jordan, Judge.
Yeah, Judge. I mean, how could I miss Judge? Yeah. I mean, last couple of years, he seemed to have fixed it. But yeah, that toe injury was kind of definitely fluky. I mean, like with DeGrom, though, I don't think I ever drafted DeGrom in a fantasy league.
It was never an option for me this year.
Yeah, I was in on Eloy to start the – I think I drafted him in one of the Gladiators. And I took a – then after doing some research, I'm like, okay, I don't want Eloy. And I don't have him on any other teams besides that. So the moral of the story is just – going into next year, at least if we have injuries in spring training or like even with Harper. So Everyone thought he was a great pick because you got him like at pick, 200, I think. And then he came back 2 months early, but he's not doing anything. He's sitting for a good average, but no power, no speed. You're better off drafting JD Martinez with that pick because I think they're going the same range. They're both util only, at least in NFBC. So I'm guilty of this too, of being optimistic with these guys. Like I mentioned, McKenzie, I've added right on two main events. But next year, I'm going to try to be more just go for the guys who are healthy and someone else can get lucky, like with a Tatis or someone like that. Or so
it pans out much less than it gets right or it gets type. It's wrong before much more than it's right type situation. And I'm with you. Like it's Pino's preached it forever. Like, why draft injuries when they're going to find you anyways, more often than not? That's kind of the gist of it. So I know on draft, like as I'm drafting, I try to be more conscientious of that. I guess as the season goes on, I kind of forget to be conscientious of that. But definitely when I'm going to the draft day, I'm trying to avoid it because this 6 months is a long season. Everyone gets hurt, it feels like. So, like, let's not walk into it with an injury. That's a tough way to go about it. So, 100% with you on that. We learn something every year we play this game. It's always something that we can always improve on. And that's why we do these things called podcasts and everything else to chat it out and work through it all. So, been a fun conversation. I've been enjoying trying to dig into it and see what we can do as we decided if we wanted to even add injured guys for the rest of the season on this show. But it comes down to what's available out there, and some of these injured guys might be worth better than what's out there. So, like, in the grand scheme of things, adding like a Nestor Cortez or some other starter might be better than rostering Matt Manning right now in the end. We'll see how that goes. And that's the moral of the story. But Ben, it's a pleasure as always. Looking forward to having you on again, probably sometime soon when Curlin has to work again. But always a pleasure, my friend.
Yeah, thanks again, Bubba, for having me on. I always enjoy talking baseball with you, and we'll do it again soon.
Yes, indeed. Yes, we will. Make sure y'all follow Ben on Twitter at @BreakingBen_T. You will not regret it. Good, good guy. Heck of a fantasy player. I'm on Twitter at @BDentric. Until next time, Bench with Bubba, episode 598 in the books. Catch you guys next time.
Way to win up to 25 times your money this football season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100 and use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit match up to $100. PrizePicks, daily fantasy sports made easy.